Recess into public hearings.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Burton, second, Mr. Wilson. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mr. Arlett.
Yes.
Burton?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
I have the motion carried. We're now in public hearings. Mr. Moore?
Before we go to public hearings, Mr. President, if we could make a housekeeping change on a motion that was made before we recessed, and to change the number. And it is there should be a new motion moving that the authority be given to the administrator to negotiate, enter into a contract, and purchase parcel number 2016-9, as opposed to the number that was given prior to.
We had the wrong number to start with.
That is correct. It was the wrong number on there.
2016?
Who did that?
I don't know.
2016-9.
Okay. Just want to reconfirm what I heard.
Yes.
I'll move that motion.
Motion, Mr. Arlett. Second, Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
Questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mr. Arlett.
Yes.
Mr. Burton. Mr. Wilson.
I'm wondering what piece of land is.
You know.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
I have a yes. Motion carried. Now we're good with that, Mr.
Yes.
Moore? Now we're in public hearings.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President. I will read the rules of procedure for County Council zoning hearings. When Council holds public hearings on zoning applications, they are legislative hearings because Council uses the information obtained during the hearings to decide whether to adopt an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map in the manner requested by the applicant. Sussex County, in its zoning land use decisions, does not discriminate against persons based on race, color, religion, national origin, disability, familial status, source of income, sex, creed, marital status, age, gender identity, or sexual orientation. Public comments made on the basis of bias and stereotype concerning people within these protected classes will not be taken into consideration by the county in its deliberations. Each application shall be announced. The director will review with council the minutes and testimony from the P&Z hearing, and those minutes will be made part of the record along with any exhibits introduced at the P&Z hearing and any recommendation made by the commission. The applicant will be called on to present and explain their application, present reasons supporting their application. Council may question the applicant and their witnesses. After the applicant has presented their application, council will provide an opportunity for anyone else who favors the application to speak. After that, any persons who oppose or question the application will be allowed to state the reasons for their opposition or questions. After that, there will be no rebuttal by the applicant, and the hearing will be closed unless the council decides to leave the record open for a specific purpose and time period. Further, the applicant will not be allowed to question persons who speak in opposition, and persons who speak in opposition will not be allowed to question the applicant or their witnesses. If you intend to speak, you are required to come to the front, stand at the speaker stand, state your name and home address before you make a statement. Please sign the sheet at the speaker stand. If you represent or speak for a group or organization, please identify who you represent. When you make your statement, please be concise. Do not repeat yourself. If you have a written statement, hand it to me and it will be made part of the record. If there is more than one witness for the applicant or more than one person in opposition, please do not repeat points that a prior speaker has already stated. All persons in attendance should conduct themselves in an orderly fashion. No applause or other disruptive behavior is permitted. If you have a cell phone, pager, beeper, or other telephonic device with you, please take the time now to turn it off or switch it to silent service. At the conclusion of the hearing on each application, council may either approve it, deny it, or defer it to a later date. If P&Z Commission deferred action, council will do likewise. And Mr. President, we have two hearings today, and they are going to be, it's going to be one hearing, but obviously the votes, if taken, would have to be taken on them individually. And it's my understanding P&Z did defer on both of these. So we can vote to defer on each individually. And Ms. Cornwell?
Thank you. The first application is an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agricultural residential district to an MR medium density residential district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, containing 13.33 acres, more or less, located on the southwest corner of Lighthouse Road, Route 54, and Sand Cove Road, and the east side of Sand Cove Road, approximately 211 feet south of Lighthouse Road, Route 54. The tax parcel is District 533, Map 19, Parcel 52. And the second application is conditional use 2098. It is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an MR medium density residential district for a multifamily 62 dwelling duplex units, structures to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, containing 13.33 acres, more or less, located on the southwest corner of Lighthouse Road, Route 54, and Sand Cove Road, and the east side of Sand Cove Road, approximately 211 feet south of Lighthouse Road, Route 54, and the tax parcel is District 533, Map 19, Parcel 52. The Planning and Zoning Commission did hold a public hearing on October 12th. At that time, there was some information provided, which was service level evaluation from DLDOT, exhibit booklets, a plus letter. We also noted that there were six letters in opposition. The commission also found that there were several people who spoke in opposition to the application. At that meeting, they deferred the application. At their next meeting, October 26th, they also deferred both of the applications for further consideration. Since the October 12th public hearing, we have received three additional letters in opposition to the application concerning overdevelopment and transportation. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Yes, if I may.
Charlotte?
You just mentioned that they have deferred for consideration. Was their record closed?
Yes.
You just mentioned that three letters of opposition were just received.
For us.
That is for
us. For you.
That's for us. I just want to make sure that's not for their record. That's for our record. I just wanted
Correct.
To reaffirm, for the record, that's for our record, not theirs.
Correct.
And are they still waiting on any more information?
No, they just wanted for additional time for further consideration.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. If there are no other questions, Mr. Byard.
Thank you, Mr. Board. For the record, Gene Byard. I represent Fenwick Knowles, the applicant. With me today is Ken Christenberry, the project engineer, who will take you through the project. The principal, Fenwick Knowles, Joel Farr, could not be present today. He intended to be here, but he is attending a family funeral this afternoon. As Mr. Moore noted, these two applications have been consolidated into one hearing since they involve the same property. And these applications mark yet another development project on the Route 54 corridor as the 54 area continues to develop as a mixed residential, highway commercial, and neighborhood business area. Beginning many, many years ago with Americana Bayside, this area has transitioned from a quiet rural area to a very busy mixed density residential area with a commercial component. Looking at the area zoning map, and Ken, if you could put the map up on the screen, please.
Ken Christenberry with Axiom Engineering here in Georgetown. Ken, gonna work for me? How can I get to my PDFs?
Sure, but just so you know, that is the zoning map.
Mr. Byard is rather old school, so yeah. We have one that looks like a tax map.
I believe in print.
Let me take it. Let me get it for you.
It should be the first slide of the PDF, as far as I don't know. There you are.
The most recent zoning activity was last August when council rezoned this property, approximately 15.3 acres. It's known as the Melson property. 3 acres were rezoned B1 neighborhood business and are now the site of the Melson funeral home. The balance of the property was rezoned MRRPC as yet another phase of Americana Bayside with a density of approximately 4.8 units to the acre. This application, we believe, is consistent with the character and trend of development as it moves along Route 54. It's also consistent with the future land use element of the 2018 update to the comprehensive plan. Properties in a growth area where medium and higher density development are appropriate and where neighborhood business and commercial activities exist. This area will continue to grow as it's continued to grow over the past 10 to 12 years. As Ken will describe to you, there are no significant site development issues. Central water and sewer are available. And Delta has found that there is no additional significant traffic burden on Route 54. As a result, the project should not have any adverse impact on neighboring property values or the evolving character of the Route 54 corridor. In fact, it is a mirror image of the RPC on the Nelson property. One thing I would point out, unlike Americana Bayside, this project is not part of a larger project to be developed in phases. Instead, it's one 13-acre parcel with no likelihood of additional phases. As a result, instead of an RPC overlay, a conditional use is the better course because it will define the density of the project. The applicant proposes a density of slightly less than 4 units to the acre. Ken, if you would, talk briefly about the site and its current condition.
Can I go to the next slide? Just use the pen.
You should be able to use the clicker.
It's going to take me to the next. It's not a PowerPoint. It's a.
It usually works.
Okay. Oh, there's something.
This is what the area looked like in 2005. The site itself was being farmed then, and that remains so. The next slide. This is what it looks like as of last April. So you can see the area certainly has had a trend of development. I want to skip that one because Mr. Byer wants to talk a little bit more about the existing. Keep going.
Looks like it moves for you. Yeah.
Pick slide number 29. It's actually from the archaeologist report. See the existing conditions of the site. It's been tilled for quite some time. There is an area of woods that does remain. That is where there is a family cemetery. That is an integral part of our project's open space because we obviously don't want to disturb or relocate anything. We've seen enough movies to know that that would really be a bad idea.
In your project book, gentlemen, there is an archaeological report prepared by Dr. Otter.
You said it was slide 27.
Lays out the perimeter of the cemetery and some history.
And then slide 28 is the older aerial photographs. So obviously, that cemetery has been there for quite some time. And it's, if you go down to slide 31, that shows actually the detailed results of his work. Where it says area of soil stripping, he actually will look for more than just headstones and footstones. He'll actually scrape a few inches of soil off to identify basically human body-sized plots where the soil's been disturbed and map out for us where the human remains are. Because when I've spoken to Dr. Otter before, he's always said, you're going to find more remains than stones on any family plot like this. And that was certainly the case here. The red ones indicate marked graves, and the ones that don't have a red marker indicate unmarked graves that he found. So we've had a thorough enough study done to know that we're not going to be disturbing any human remains. And obviously, if that ever happens, the state gets involved and the project gets shut down until that's resolved.
Beyond tillable farmland, woods, and graveyard, are there any wetlands on site?
The only wetlands, there's a very interesting strip. I guess if you go to the site plan, sheet 23 would probably work. There's actually about a 30-foot wide strip of land that's next down to even less than that. So our client actually owns to the center line of this ditch, which is useful for drainage but not useful for development. The only development to occur on that side of the road is we will be extending our bike trail to match the extension of the bike trail from Americana Bayside.
And that's on the south side of 54?
It's on the south side of, it doesn't get to the intersection. The first corner piece is another owner. Starts right here, about where I'm showing the pond discharging into the tax ditch, and continues down to here. And again, it's very narrow. Other than a stormwater outfall and a connection to a bike path, there's really no other plans for that land. As a matter of fact, DelDOT's probably taking half, but in the form of both a dedication and a permanent easement. So that strip of land is the only wetlands, and the only wetlands is in the ditch itself, except for there's a small pocket right here, which I don't know how they decide whether it's regulated or not. And the bike path, of course, is going to be designed to either avoid impacts or minimize impacts to that small plot of wetlands right there.
Who will maintain that ditch?
The ditch? It is a tax ditch. Okay. So there is a tax ditch management association that was formed. Janelle, if you could go back up in the slides, I think it's around slide 5 or 6 is the email I got from the tax ditch drainage section, which is a part of DENREC. So it was formed in 1908 as a ditch company under an older Delaware law. The main channel was noted as having been cleaned out in 1977. In 1999, it was formed as a tax ditch organization. There was a clean out noted very shortly after it was formed as a tax ditch. She didn't have any records of any more recent clean outs that have occurred. There have been 5 court order changes involving right-of-way, relocation of a portion of the main and watershed change. She says that's on the lower end. She didn't specify, but I believe that Americana Bayside probably had some effect on how the tax ditch flows, because this runs right through that project and is essentially a part of it.
Ted, am I correct that you prepared an application to PLUS?
I did.
PLUS responded, and you responded to PLUS?
I did.
You prepared a County Ordinance 99-9C compliance letter?
I did. That's.
And you prepared an environmentally sensitive development district overlay zone report?
I did.
All of which are in the project booklet.
Correct.
Let's talk about stormwater.
Before we do that, if I can, real quick, the two questions. Number one is that tax ditch, per the email there, is it saying that it was cleaned out in 99 or 2000? Is that what that's saying?
Yeah, it means, let's see here. Clean out noted to occur 1999-early 2000s.
Okay, which is... So
apparently they've done some maintenance to it.
The last time it was cleaned out was then?
It's been close to 20 years, yeah.
What's a typical time frame for these tax ditches to be cleaned out?
But that's not an unusual amount of time. I would imagine that's probably due. But that's something that the tax ditch managers make that decision on whether or not they want to do any kind of special assessment in their tax
district. It's also possible, Mr. Arlett, that the DENREC does not have complete and current and accurate information. I'm guessing with the development of Americana Bayside over the years, there have been cleanups of that ditch. I don't know, but I'm guessing that.
Okay, and then the other part was, you don't have to go back to it now, but you're tying into Americana Bayside's bike path.
Yes.
I guess, have they given permission, or is that something that is needed from you?
It's going to be installed within the DelDOT permanent easement. Whenever we do an entrance plan, DelDOT steals land from any property owner who wants an entrance permit in the form of a dedication.
It's a little harsh.
It is. I'm not a big fan of the Department of Transportation.
This was not the owner's idea. This is DelDOT's requirement.
Correct. So there's about a 5 or 10 foot dedication, and we could look at the site plan to get the specifics. And then beyond that dedication, the DelDOT will require a 15 foot permanent easement for new developments. Sometimes they simply want a bike path planned for and allowed to be considered in the future. And sometimes they actually want us to indicate it on our entrance plans that the path will be constructed. So the entrance for the Melson property portion of Americana Bayside is about here, and their plan shows a bike path in the DelDOT permanent easement, and we would butt up to that. So essentially, it's in a state-controlled easement. Now, here's the even more interesting part. The state specifically refuses to take maintenance responsibility for the bike paths. They make us put a note on the record plan that says the state assumes no responsibility, but they do require us to build it. Ultimately, it would be the responsibility of the homeowners association to maintain it. The only good news for the HOA is they make us build it at a very similar rating as what you would expect for a road, 8 inches of stone, 3 inches of blacktop. So those bike paths built to Del-Lot standards are going to last a very, very, very long time without a lot of maintenance.
Bike paths are built to the same specifications as a road, i.e. a car.
The county subdivision ordinance.
I'm sorry.
10 years ago required only 2 inches of blacktop over 4 inches of stone. They have upgraded it some. Del-Lot's bike path requirements are, I think they're overkill, but they are what they are, and I have not found a way to convince them to think otherwise.
Okay.
Stormwater. Janelle, could you go back up to, I think it's slide 4 or 5, the one that has the topo, slide number 4. There was a concern brought up at our public hearing that the ditch across the street from us was only 3 feet deep, and it floods out all the time, and there are issues with water backing up. And there was questions about whether or not the ditch was tidally influenced. The ditch is, of course, fairly close to sea level. The downstream end of the pipe that runs under Route 54 comes out here is only 5.5 feet above sea level at its flow line, so it's not that far above sea level. We are pretty close to the coast and to the bay, as you all can imagine. As you get down to my client's property, the ditch is anywhere from 4.34 to 5.5 feet deep, which I've designed many sites where we have ditches that are 2 feet deep or shallower. So the ditch is very, it's a significant flowway. It is, however, subject to, if you could go to tab 5, it is subject to 100-year backwater. The 100-year flood elevation is at an elevation of 4, and some of those spot grades are lower than that. So during a 100-year storm when the Assiniboine Bay is backing up, there certainly would be water that could back up there. Now, the way that DENREC handles that when they're looking at a site development application, if they were to deem this to be a tidally influenced ditch, it would actually change what the requirements are for us. And this may sound counterintuitive, but a tidally influenced ditch actually has, they want you to release the water as quickly as possible, which is the opposite of what you would have in many other site developments. Many other site developments, you want to slow the water down, hold it on your site. I don't know that we're going to try to argue that it's a tidally influenced ditch, because it appears as though it may only be tidally influenced during a hurricane or a 100-year storm. So I that's not a discussion I've had with the Conservation District yet, but certainly any stormwater management system will go through a rigorous review process, a process that didn't exist in the 1980s when a lot of the area surrounding here was going through development that didn't have much more drainage concerns. And the current regulations that were updated in 2014 are very, they require a very rigorous review of everything we do to the property.
Talk about Del-Lot for a moment. Tell me about your dealings with Del-Lot.
Janelle, if you could.
That must be fun.
Yes.
Del-Lot, they're my favorite. Keep scrolling down, if you could, to number 13. Del-Lot issued a response to our plan January 22nd, 2017, in the form of a plus review. If you could go to the very next page. Well, and this is their comment when they first looked at the plan. While the proposed development would not warrant a traffic impact study, it would generate more than 200 vehicle trip ends per day, and therefore, per section 2.3.2 of the manual, Del-Lot could require a traffic operational analysis if we determine in the plan review that a TOA is needed to address concerns about the proposed site entrance. Because all access will be way of Sand Cove Road, the proposed development may create a need for turning lanes at the intersection of Route 54 and Sand Cove Road. As necessary, Del-Lot will require a TOA to rigorously examine the need for those lanes. Per section 2.5.2 of the Development Coordination Manual, Del-Lot will require offset improvements along the developed frontage of Sand Cove Road. Specifically, the lands of Thelma Commons shall provide a right-of-way dedication to allow for future improvement by others. That was our first response. If you could, Janelle, go to the next page. Several weeks later, they took a look at it, and this was the same gentleman, it's Bill Brockenbrow up at the Highway Department. Our previous comments suggested that the applicant might need to improve the intersection of Delaware Route 54 and Sand Cove Road. Subsequently, we determined that a right-of-way dedication to allow for future improvements by others would be sufficient. So now if you could go back up to page, I think, 8. No, I'm sorry, 10. 10. The dedication that I spoke to Charlotte about a few minutes ago is based off of a distance from the center line of the road. Typically on a local road, they want 30 feet so that if both sides develop, they would have a 60-foot wide right-of-way. It allows them to get additional lanes and drainage taken care of. What they asked us to do here was to provide an additional 4 feet of dedication along both frontages for a distance of 76.68 feet on Sand Cove Road and 305.52 feet along Route 54. Gifting that real estate to the department was deemed by the department our contribution to allowing them to have this intersection improved by others. And I imagine by others, they mean other developers that are impacting the area. So this right-of-way dedication is a part of our site plan. And when our subdivision plat is recorded, that dedication with the additional land would be recorded with it. The next document, Janelle, would be number C, which would be, keep going, stop. Number 18, it's our service level evaluation. We had our site plan at the time had 62 dwelling units, which had a density of 4.8, I believe. And based on that, their service level evaluation said they do not recommend the applicant be required to perform a traffic impact study for the subject application. We followed up with taking our site plan in to them for what's called a letter of no objection to recordation, and that is where they actually approve the location of the entrance and an overview of the improvements that are going to be required. Is there a deceleration lane? How long does that need to be? Bike paths, bike lanes, everything else needs to be shown. It's not a full set of construction plans. We'll have some drainage work, pavement thicknesses, and things of that nature that are indicated ultimately on a DelDOT construction and entrance plan. But this is a very formal process that they send us through. And if you go to, yeah, thank you, she's a step ahead of me. July 17th, 2017, DelDOT issued a letter of no objection. This no objection shall be valid for a period of 5 years. This was based on our site plan that did indicate 62 dwelling units. The site plan, as you saw before, does have a deceleration lane on Sand Cove Road, starting essentially as close to the intersection of Sand Cove Road as we could. And then there's a 5-foot bike lane between our decel lane and the through lane. So there's pretty substantial improvements. They did not believe that a left turn would be necessary because there's going to be very few coming out of Americana Bayside coming into our community because there's no commercial destinations there to speak of. It's all residential. There was also some question about the width of Sand Cove Road. Sand Cove Road as it exists today is anywhere from 21 to 22 feet wide. And when we are done putting in our bike path and our deceleration lane, it will be 34 feet wide along our frontage.
Okay, let's talk about what's happened since you first submitted the site plan to DelDOT and DePlus. How has the plan been modified?
We did decide to go for a higher end product and to reduce the density and increase the open space. So instead of 62 units as was approved by DelDOT, the current plan has 52 units, which is a density of 4 units to the acre.
Is the effect of that to create more open space and save more trees?
It does. If you look, this is the current plan. If you could briefly, Janelle, go back up to the first plan, which I think is around page 5 or 6. Page 9. You can see that the cemetery is kind of boxed in, and the trees that are around it are a little more impacted by the proposed development. If you go back to the new plan, you can see that using the cul-de-sac, we're able to save a little bit more of those trees, have an open space that's more contiguous. Essentially, it starts at the pond. It runs right through the middle of the project. So the middle of the project has an open space element for essentially the whole community. We definitely felt like this was an improvement and would make it a better way for folks to live in.
Will it be a road left to go to cemetery?
There is access to the cemetery. I'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
There's also parking for people who want to visit the cemetery.
Yeah. The parking lot for the swimming pool area is actually just is adjacent to the cemetery. So folks who, if there were anyone who wanted to visit the Hudson Cemetery, and there are quite a few Hudsons around, but I don't know. We don't know that anybody's been visiting it recently, but if they were to have any interest, it would be very easy for them to park at the parking lot for the pool and simply walk around the pool house and go visit the cemetery.
Would they be permitted to? I mean, this is a private community, right? And so it's...
Yes, it's actually...
I guess, is that going to be somewhere deeded or somewhere stated?
It's a matter of state law, Mr. Arbuckle, that there must be access to cemeteries.
The note on the plan...
You don't have to convince me. I think that you have to convince that community, whoever, if this is approved, those homeowners in the HOA.
The plot's note actually reads, permission to use the parking lot and subdivision road for Hudson Family Cemetery and the conservation easement shown, and this sort of brown spot is the conservation easement, is hereby granted in perpetuity to the descendants of the Hudson family interred here. So on the record plat will be a declaration that any descendants who have any interest in visiting a cemetery have a legal right to do it.
One other matter with respect to the cemetery, the developer has proffered a condition, the proposed conditions in your project booklet, to construct either a wrought iron fence or an anodized aluminum fence around the perimeter of the cemetery with the gate for members of Hudson Medicine to walk in. Also in that condition is the right of the Hudson family to use the amenity parking lot in common with the residents to access the cemetery. Ken, you were going to talk about landscaping.
You go to the bottom of the slides. There's two columns down there. Start with the first. There you go. Start with the first column. Landscape Architectural Services in Dover prepared this landscape plan for the project's open space and amenity areas. And as you can see, it's going to be well landscaped. The 20-foot buffer that's required on any major subdivision has been included in the conditional use site plan, as well as an attempt to leave as much of the existing forest intact as could be worked into the plan. So you can see the kind of yellowish color here, and here is leaving existing forest to remain. If you remember from the aerial photo, there's not a lot of forest on the property. Most of it's been tilled. But the area that does have forest, we made efforts to leave that standing where we could.
There's a groundwater recharge area located on this property.
There is, and it's in that area near the cemetery. Well,
I was reading DNREC referred to it as a significant, type of, I guess, recharge it because it's...
Yes, and leaving that forest in place is
certainly... Well, that'll be helpful, but when you start disturbing where all the land is, where those houses, and it takes over that whole corner where it looks like you got 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe about six, maybe a half a dozen or more, 6 to 8 homes, sites.
Yes.
That will disturb, that'll change the characteristics of the ground, soil types. So
yes.
We're going to lose a significant part of that recharge area because the development, there's going to be a little bit left because of the graveyard and some of the trees, right? But
that
it still looks like there's a significant impact on the...
There is no prohibition on developing areas as excellent groundwater recharge areas, but we did make an effort to leave as much of the existing vegetation standing that was in that area that we could. If you go to the next slide, which I think might be the last one, there are some, that's the one I was at. That's going to be the area out, along the pond and in front of the pond. There'll be attractive monument sign to hopefully convince people that it's a place worth looking at when they think about where they'd like to live.
There was some concern expressed by a neighbor across Route 54 about the possibility of water in the form of spray from the pond from a fountain crossing Route 54. Would the landscaping plan address that concern?
I think it was.
Gentlemen, that's what's in front of you. This project has been thoughtfully designed, and then it was redesigned. It preserves about 40% of the site, or 5 acres of open space, not the stormwater pond, and preserves 2 acres of mature trees. As I think is clear from the zoning map and from your decision last August, the housing type and the density are consistent with what's immediately next door. This will serve an active and growing empty nester and retiree real estate market. As you may recall, I know Mr. Cole does, when council approved change of zone 1803, that was the Maricopa Bayside 12.3-acre MRRVC, council specifically found this project is in compliance with the goals and objectives of the comprehensive plan. And further, this project will not adversely impact neighboring properties, traffic, or the environment. We submit that those same findings apply fully here. There are people here who would like to speak in opposition to this project with some generalized and some specific objections about overdevelopment, flooding, and traffic on 54 Current. If this project follows the comprehensive plan and the character and trend of nearby and neighboring development, that's not overdevelopment. If the project is required to meet all of Denrec's stormwater regulations, flooding issues will be addressed and resolved in 21st century fashion. The problem with most of the flooding in this area is, one, the area is low, and two, most of the development occurred before Denrec had real stormwater management regulations. As to traffic, you've heard Ken say, no traffic impact study, no traffic operations analysis, and it has approved the location of the entrance to the project. I think you can conclude that Delgado has found no significant traffic issues with this project. With that, we'd be glad to answer any questions you have.
Any questions?
Questions?
Your question, man?
Sure. I know you've got some. I'm going to do
I want you to go first.
See, I knew you would have some.
Scarlett.
We're supposed to have some questions, right? So you mentioned earlier the response that you received from DelDOT showed 200 vehicles per day. That was with your 62 units. I think that was in the letter from DelDOT, I think, specified the 200 vehicles per day.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah, I can actually give you the number.
I just want to reaffirm.
You're going to sit there and count.
Who counts them? Their projection the projection is above 200. 200 is kind of the cutoff for whether or not they're going to require any kind of traffic analysis.
Where's that letter at? That was from DelDOT. I think.
The one that mentions 200 is the plus comments, which is the earliest letter, so you know you have to go back up.
Okay.
And then, of course, that one right there, that's the one that mentions if it generates more than 200, they reserve the right to require traffic operational analysis.
So what have they deemed? I mean, with the reduction down to 52, what have they deemed as a daily?
Their approval was issued based on 62 units.
Right.
The fact that we've eliminated density doesn't concern them. If we came in and had 72 units, I would need to start all over with those guys.
Right.
So they don't have a problem with a reduction in density.
So they have no objection with this
at 62
with this,
units, and we're presently
and you're bringing down to 52.
52.
Mm-hmm. And then any improvements that have been deemed required from you guys, DelDOT is saying that obviously the developer will pay for all improvements.
That's not a matter of choice.
I just want to make sure it's on the record. So
absolutely.
Okay. Okay.
I just say I'm looking at the plan, and you say it is in the environmentally sensitive developing district, correct? which is the land use plan says that the that district, the environmentally sensitive developing areas of land use designation, recognizes that a range of housing types should be permitted, including single-family homes, townhouses, and multifamily, which is what you're proposing. But where does it say in there anywhere that we should always increase the density? Because it doesn't reference that. So it just does say that, in the way I read it, is development's okay, a range of housing types are okay.
Right.
But nowhere has do I read anywhere in our plan in that district that it's encouraging us to increase the density. Because when I look around, and this is from her memorandum to us, it says it's there's property zoned AR1 all around it. There's also a C1 down the street, and there's some MR districts also, medium density. But it seems that the most of her, what she's designated in the surrounding areas, is mostly AR1. Is there anything that you can point to that says we should, other than we've got some neighboring properties that do have MR districts where we've got these big planned communities with all these amenities and all this open space?
I think we've got to go at it another way, Mr. Gold. First of all, the plan does not discourage higher densities.
Right.
In fact, it encourages where there is central water sewer available, as is here. Plus, if history and council's actions in the past mean anything, this is where MR density should occur, and it has. If you look at the zoning map, going west, Americana Bayside dominates the landscape.
Oh, I know it.
And that's at a density, and I say this not for certain, but I believe at approximately 4 units to the acre. This phase next to this project is 4.
Well, that one, the overall density of Americana Bayside is closer to 2.
2 with a substantial commercial component.
Right, but it's, because I can remember that argument.
Right, but the fact is, this is what the area is, and this is where development of this sort should occur, according to the plan.
The Melson RPC change of zone 1803 actually has a density of about 4.8 units per acre, and ours is at 4.0, which actually corresponds to the allocation of sewer EDUs provided by the county when they chose to add this property to a sewer district.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to point out that my reading of the plan doesn't really actually encourage anything. It doesn't discourage, I agree with that, but it doesn't encourage. It doesn't say
right. We
have to upzone. It just says that it's appropriate for these different types of housing and to be developed, but it doesn't say it at what density and things of that nature.
Yeah, and with the installation of central sewer, the underlying assumption that seems to have come from the county is that 4 units per acre is appropriate for areas that have central sewer.
Well, we want to make sure we do have enough wastewater
Absolutely.
In the ground
That's
capacity, whether
not
whatever
not
we get
for 10-story apartments.
The Burton. You done, George?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
If I remember the Melson property correctly, is that, and this was my thinking, is that they traded density of Americana Bayside for that. So I was in the approval of that, right? I was thinking, no fish, no fowl, right? It's this. The total acreage remains at the same number, whether it's 4 over here and none over there, seemed to make sense to me.
But the distinction, though, is the 3 acres of D1, which at the time would permit 12 units per acre, as a matter of fact.
The B1 being
the funeral
home.
Yeah. But we agree, there's a blend of densities all over America. Of course, there's the Freeman Center, there's stores.
But there was a total number.
Right.
And the Melson property
allocated
off of the total.
Right. That's not the case here. That's why this is a conditional use.
Okay.
Not part of a global RPC.
Yeah, but it's hard to look at taking away from a total and saying, well, the property next to it is the similar density.
Well, it's a higher density.
The
The Melson piece is a higher density.
It's a higher density, but it comes out of a bigger pot.
Got it. But this phase of Americana phase is what it is, and it is the neighbor next door.
It is the neighbor on that little spot.
Yes.
So, okay. Did planning and zoning look at 52, 62? What?
52 is the plan that was presented in the public hearing. 62 was presented at plus.
Okay, so the approval that you're looking for today is 52.
Correct.
Even though this is advertised
Correct.
As 62.
It reflects a reduction in the density that was originally contemplated.
Okay.
And the revised plan, Mr. Burton, was submitted well before the public hearing.
Oh, yes.
Of planning and zoning?
Yes.
Okay. The one last question is you mentioned that Sand Hill Road was going to be increased to 34 feet, and you mentioned a bike path in the next breath. Is the road getting increased to 34 feet
it is,
then the bike path?
It is, because what happens is if you have a 22-foot wide road now, when you add a 5-foot strip of pavement to be a bike lane and then a 10-foot turn lane beside that, your overall width
yes or no.
of your pavement
yeah.
increases. Yeah. So from where our deceleration lane starts to our entrance, and that's pretty close to it. Jenna, if you could go back to the site plan number 23. Actually, number 24 might be better, because it kind of details out the entrance.
I'm reading you're referring to, right?
So,
yeah, I just wrote.
DLDOT asked us to give them an extra 5 feet of width from the intersection for the first 75 feet.
A paved road, or just width?
The paved road is, first I started with what DLDOT, the land they wanted.
Okay.
Just beyond the extra dedication that they wanted, they asked us to do a deceleration lane. It's 185 feet long. It's a little hard to read on the screen. So starting here and all the way to our entrance, the road's actually going to be 34 feet. Wide. Once you get past our entrance, that's no longer the case. It'll be very similar to what it is now, which is about 22 feet.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And this is not part of any town center, is it?
No, this is a one
You're how far out of Fenwick Island at this point?
Gosh, is the crow flies or?
Well, I guess down 54. You're getting.
You said,
3 or 4 miles. Huh?
3 or 4 miles,
yeah. In summertime, it's hours, Mr. Cole, but I'd say it's at least 3.5 miles.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I think in a town center, it does encourage higher densities.
Any other questions? Mr. Byard, do you have any other witnesses or anything else?
That's the application.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else here today that would like to speak in favor of this application? Anyone else here that would like to speak in favor of this application? Seeing none, is there anyone here today that would like to speak in opposition to this application? Sir? And ma'am, you can come up next.
Good afternoon. My name is Ed Ways. I live at 37484 Leisure Drive in West Fenwick in the Refuge. And I wish a lot of you could have been at that Roxana Fire Hall when we had our first meeting, when most of the residents in that general area came. There was well over 275 people represented there, and many more that couldn't get in. A second meeting was held at Indian River School Auditorium. Same type of response. I don't think anything's going to stop this development or any of the other developments that are already approved. I'm against it, but I won't be able to stop it. My question to the council is, when is enough enough? You've got a situation where we're trying to put 10 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound bag. There's developments that have already been approved on the books that will happen. Why can we not put a 12-month moratorium on future approvals until something can be worked out? I don't know that there's a solution to this. You can make 54 six lanes each way. You're dumping into Coastal Highway, which is basically two lanes, and you're having three roads dump into there. And it's the same on the other end. But when is enough enough? When will approval stop? That's my question to you. The people that came out and are angry about what's going on, That's today. Think about the next 4 or 5 years. This development was presented very nicely, 52 units. Am I right? That's 104 additional living spaces and duplexes?
No,
52 total.
Okay.
So that's 52.
26.
Okay. When is enough enough? When will the council, planning and zoning, DelDOT, make a decision and say things have to be done different? Again, I don't know what the solution is. I don't know if there's a solution. But keeping stuffing the same stuff in the same bag, you're going to break the bag. If you have any questions, I'd be...
Yes, can I ask him a question?
Sure.
The question would be this. It's zoned AR1, which permits 2 units to the acre.
Yes,
that's
sir.
Their permitted use today. They wouldn't have to come in here for anything like that. What they're coming in for is so they can go to 4 units to the acre.
Yes, sir.
Or more, actually, one time, but now it's back to about 4 units to the acre. You do realize that... at the AR1 zoning category, the 2 units to the acre, they could, and how many, are, what, 13 acres or something like that, right? 13 times 2, more or less. That we pretty much are stuck with as a council, because that is permitted, and we'd be taking something from them. But they're in the process of asking us to give them something. So would you say that the AR1 zoning category would be more preferable to the existing conditions on with traffic and other things on 26 as opposed to upzoning it to 4 units to the acre?
I don't know the answer to that.
Well, more would be more, and leaving it as is would be less.
Farmers want to sell their land.
Oh, yeah.
Right, and you can't stop them. You can stop a developer from building on that land by not giving him approval.
Right, what I'm just saying is there is this implied approval at the AR1. Which is what their current zoning is. They are permitted to put in houses today. So we could try to take it away, but it would be very difficult to defend that. So what they're asking for is to basically double the density.
That's fine, but when will the infrastructure be able to handle all of these new developments, all these new...
That's a good question.
And this is where, at some point, can't we stop something? Get a breath of air and see if there's something better that can be done? I don't know how many of you guys go down 54 in the summertime. For 3.5, 4 months, it's 2.5 hours to get 3 miles. Councilman Arlette lives there. He can tell you that. You can't get out of your development. And DelDOT came to the first meeting at Roxana. They had a couple of representatives. I don't think they were prepared for what they got. Because they came off, were you there?
No, unfortunately, okay. That was set on a day that we were here.
We have meetings on Tuesdays. So,
that's fine. I mean,
we didn't set the schedule, just for the record.
Completely unprepared to answer, and they almost made themselves look foolish. And I felt sorry for them, actually. They're talking about a survey that was done in 2007. They're talking about they have things in the street that can wind up counting cars. Well, if you're sitting there going a mile an hour, you're not going to count a lot of cars. I mean, there's a bunch of things. It was in February one of the surveys were done. They're much better prepared. They blame planning and zoning and the council because they say we don't have the ability to stop the development, and understandably so. The development is approved. It's built, basically. They have to fix it.
Well, a lot of it, as we deal with these issues, a lot of it's not stopping development at this point because we don't have any moratoriums and there's nothing in the near future for one. But we can not upzone. But there's current zoning and what their permitted uses are, and then there's asking for upzone. So the idea of stopping it is probably slim. But not to increase is a possibility. So I would assume you would support. At least that aspect.
Anything that will make the situation from getting worse.
Well, that's going to be tough.
I know. If you lived there, you would understand how difficult it is. And DelDOT, some of DelDOT's answers are, if I want to go east, I have to go west with that mob of traffic, down to a traffic light, go through that, make a U-turn, and come back down. They're silly solutions. You know, they're not solutions. They're silly suggestions. And they're not, I'm not trying to be critical of them. I mean, they're in a box, planning and zoning. I've gone to a couple of their meetings regarding this issue. I think that's why they didn't come back to you with an approval, because there were several people there. The farmer that lives across the street from this development, Mr. McGee, he stated $75,000 bucks his family lost the year before last from water. You build this development, it's going to be that much more water on a hard surface running out that small little drain with no place to go. We're just pounding 10 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound bag. I'm asking you to think about it seriously. You guys tell us what can be done. Because this will only get worse. I mean, the meetings will get worse. We're fighting an uphill battle. I mean, it's a political thing, it's a money thing. But you represent us, the residents. And I'm asking for you to take us into consideration.
Okay.
Try and come up with something that will improve the situation, not make it worse.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Can you also please sign in?
There's a sign-in sheet. Yeah, we'll get him to sign in before he goes too far.
Thank you.
Maybe you just put next there.
I want to thank you, first of all, for the job that you do. My name is Barbara Shamp. My address is 37083 Mallard Drive, Selbyville. I live in Swan Keys. I'm here because I'm seriously concerned. I'm concerned about loss of property and loss of life. And the reason why I'm concerned is, and I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, although, and I hope you'll take me seriously, I'm a transplant. I've been here 10 years. Vacationed here for many, many years growing up. I live in Swan Keys, and I lived through Hurricane Sandy. Well, Superstorm Sandy by the time it got to us. We decided not to leave, which was probably stupid on our part. We live right on the end of the canal, fronting the creek, Dirksen Creek. And we lived through 3 or 4 high tides in a full moon. Our house was completely surrounded by water. It came into the garage. We lost 2 cars. It took 2.5 days before we could drive out of the community. And as we drove out in an SUV, the water became deeper the further you went into the community. The force of what's called fetch, if any of you are sailors, which is the horizontal force of wind and water, had driven it inland to a depth that ruined our car. We also lost another one just sitting out in front of the house. 2 others were parked at the Food Lion. So the reason why I'm here is because we learned a lesson that day. And it was a hard lesson to learn. We thought this was paradise. And since we've been here, we have seen more and more development go up, more and more hardscape, more and more paving, and more people. I'm not against people. I love the summer. I love seeing everyone come. But there's got to be a plan. And the reason why I say this is because I'm from the Washington metropolitan area. And like you, if you've lived in an area like that and grown up in an area like that, you know what gridlock is. You know the amount of time, the amount of money, and the amount of energy it costs everyone to live in an environment like that. We came here because we thought we were getting away from it. I'm also not against rules changing or environment changing, and I understand that. I understand everybody wants a piece of that beautiful little piece of paradise. But it's got to be done within reason, and I'm here to plead with you because after this hurricane season, after I saw what happened in Houston with Harvey, I realized the same thing can happen here. When you watch all those cars going up 95 from Florida after Irma, and it took people 3 times as long to get to a destination that was safe because of the gridlock just trying to evacuate, the same thing can happen here. The same thing can happen here that happened in Houston, where the entire area turns into a bathtub and the water doesn't move. It doesn't go anywhere because there's so much hardscape. And if it continues for 5 days and we have a 1,000-year storm, which they're now saying, if you look at the study that just came out today in the Washington Post by MIT, that wasn't a 1,000-year storm, it was a 100-year storm. They've now reevaluated it, which means that it has the chance, like a roll of a dice, of happening twice in the same year. That's what we're headed into, and we have no way to evacuate people, no way to get people out safely, because we're all on the peninsula, and it's the lowest-lying area in the nation. And you may argue with that. You may say Houston's lower. I know this may be boring for some of you and you're yawning, but I would really like to have your attention because to me, this is about life and death. For some people, it's only about property, but I live in a community that has people who are 80 and 90 years old living in single and double wides. They may have one car. They're elderly. They have trouble walking. They have often have people going to the store for them and getting their medication for them. If you don't get out 3 days in advance, you won't get out. And so I'm here to plead with you in a very rational way, with a great deal of respect for the job that you do, to ask you to institute a transportation improvement district and get a master plan done, and get it done quickly. Like this gentleman who spoke before me, I'm in favor of a temporary moratorium from you all on all new building until those two things have been accomplished. That's part of Delaware procedure. It's in the state regs. Anybody can go look at it, and I know you all know about it. Well, the public knows about it now, too. We've had two town hall meetings, and it's been discussed at great length. And this is important for you to understand. People are so serious about it after what they've seen happen in three locations that are all U.S. territory. They don't want to see it happen here. You're our elected representatives, and we would like you to listen to us very clearly because it's our future, all of us together. And when it happens, it's not an if, sir. When it happens, we're all going to be out on the same road. Route 54 is the evacuation route. It is two lanes. It's two lanes. If that happens during the summertime, when everybody's here, it's going to be a catastrophe. And there will be fingers pointed, just like it's happening in Houston. And you know what's going to happen as a result. The fingers will be pointed just like they have been at the town hall meetings. It'll be DLDOT, it'll be our elected representatives, and it'll be our county council. So I'm asking you for your future and for my future and for all of my neighbors and their children who come to visit and who live with them and for the elderly people who live in Sussex County to please take action and introduce a transportation improvement district and a master plan for Southern Sussex County. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Is there anyone else that would like to speak? I'm sorry. Were there any questions?
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone else that would like to speak, sir?
They made no preparations. So whose fault is that? Yours. It's yours. Then, because I give them to the zonings. I've got that mess out.
Good morning. My name is Christopher W. McGee. My family lives at 34857 Lighthouse Road. And the last planning and zoning meeting, I came and spoke about this, and this has really been an eye-changing experience. In my 30 years, I've never come to this. I've been on the tractor. I really don't have time for it. If it wasn't for my mother, I would not be here today. To listen to everybody talk is very eye-opening. We talk about guys that have moved here, and they've seen it all, and they moved here and lived in a trailer or lived in little places, and now it's all houses. Some good, some bad. And we just heard the lady that talked about all the traffic. My grandfather sat on 54 when it was a dirt road. He knew everybody that came by there. The town of Subbeville provided fire service to the town of Fenwick Island. That's how much has changed, but it's really not changed. I still know the people out in front of my house because they sit there for an hour and a half and I've learned their life story. We have a produce stand. They stop and they talk about it. We hear things like that. Could you go to the 2017 Google Earth map? We talk about water issues and transportation issues and tax ditches and how they all change. And if you look at the tax ditch where this property is going, this isn't the beginning of the tax ditch. You have over 250 acres of cropland that has ditches, and they were, of water that is going to this ditch. Well, this property right now does not drain to the tax ditch. There are no ditches that go to that tax ditch. But with this site plan, you want to dump, round numbers, probably 50,000 more gallons of water into my tax ditch. And I am a manager of the Perch Creek tax ditch. Been there forever, since 1909, according to that gentleman. But nobody came to the tax ditch and said, hey guys, this is what we want to do. They went to the Denrek people. I'm not opposed to that, but I'm a local guy. That Denrek person, they may not be from here. You know, they don't know anything about this ditch. They don't know anything about the land. If they had come to me and said, hey, I want to dump more water in there, I said, okay, guys, it's something to look at, but you have to understand that we're keeping our head above water now. And you guys may pass this off, but it'll never come to the county council, never come to Denrek. When those people's houses flood or they can't get out, they're going to go to the tax ditch manager and say, why in hell did you let this happen? You're supposed to be my voice. I pay taxes. You should do this job. Well, I had no voice in it. And that's I'm not right nor wrong. I'm all about people developing their property. You know, that's your God-given right, if that's what you want to do. But to put 52 units in there, you know, when we plant corn, plant it real high density, you need more resources. You need more water, you need more fertilizer, you need a lot more everything else. It's the same thing with these houses. You know, you're going to have a lot more of everything else. Can we handle that? You know, listen to my neighbors? No, we can't handle that right now. I'm all for the AR1, absolutely. You know, that's their right. And, you know, and I feel that maybe fits better. Mr. Byer brought up about that all these Americana Bayside and past council history. Well, I'm a farmer. Sometimes we get it wrong. Maybe we didn't do it right, and we always want to do it better. Well, maybe this is the chance to do it better. You know, there's got to be a line in the sand drawn. If you look out west of here, there's a lot of farmland. I'm a farmer. You want to eat? We got to have farmland. I can't grow it on pavement. You know, we've grown strawberries for a very long time. The town of Subbeville was the number one producer of strawberries in the nation. Number one. We want to continue to do that. You know, the pond across the street and all this development, I hope they like strawberries and sweet corn. If they don't live there, because that's all we got. But I just don't feel that the 52 units fits. It, you know, the gentleman said, how do we stop this? Well, we don't upzone. Look, here's what the plan says, folks. If you want 26 or, you know, whatever the AR1 is for this property, yeah, take it. This is the way it is. That is the way you fix it in the short term and you stop the bleeding. Don't say, okay, well, I want to put 100 houses in here, but I'm only permitted 26. Well, there's a reason that somebody came up with why you're only allowed 26. There's reasons behind that. The road probably can't handle it. You know, they talk about the cemetery and getting to that cemetery. You know, when Americana Bayside did theirs, I would still be able to launch a boat back there. Nothing like going 4:30 in the morning to go duck hunting and launch a boat, and you think you're supposed to be back there, and the security guard says, no, you're not. This is Americana Bayside property. You know, I've lived with false promises. I understand all that. It's just business. But 26 is a better way to go with the houses. You know, I'd also like these people to know that I'm going to spread chicken shit. There are going to be cows. We have alpacas.
They're going to get out. They may get in your backyard, and little Susie may see a cow in her backyard.
They don't stink, do they?
Only when they poop. And normally it's twice a day. But, you know, I hope these people understand this. In the state of Delaware, there's a Right to Farm Act. Not many people know that. You know, I drive slow, not because I want to, but because that's the gears in the tractor. You know, this traffic deal, I may be having a bad day. I'll drive 5 miles an hour, go down and get gas, and drive back. It may not be traffic, but I'm doing the best I can. And I hope these people understand that, you know, we're fighting a losing battle. Farmers are retiring. The average age of a farmer is 65 years old. He's not lucky. He got all girls. None of them girls don't care about farming. He may have to sell his land.
Except for your mom.
Yes. My mother was very fortunate.
You might farm her. RFD, did you look at that? Farm her?
That's it.
My women doing farm her.
Absolutely. But they may not have the farm to get carry on. You know, that's their retirement. And that is their right to sell their farm. But the ones that are still here, you know, you guys got to give us a little credit for what we're trying to do. You know, I'm 31 years old and $2 million in debt and grain prices suck. You know, if I want to get out of it and build houses, okay, I may choose that. That is, you know, and you don't want to take people's property rights away, but you got to do what the ground can stand. And, you know, and I am all for development. Make it better. I will personally never do it, and everything I put will be in farmland preservation, so the next generations after me have no choice. But 52 is much. 52 is way, way too much. We deal with traffic. You can't affect that. You know, you've got the town of Selbyville. They're putting house developments in left and right, and that's out of your gentleman's control. You have no power in that. Town of Selbyville comes all the way to our packing house, and they got houses stacked up. You know, all those people are going to come down 54 too. So these people want you guys to do anything, it has to be a collective effort. This is state, county, local government. Everybody has to get their head squared away. But to come back to this, I'm for AR1. You know, do what the plan says. That's what somebody said. These roads can handle. Yes, we've got water and sewer. That just means we don't have cesspools anymore. You know, we've moved to the 21st century where you don't have to worry about calling somebody to come pump it out. It's the best water there is in Sussex County, right on Williamsville. I like their Fenwick Knolls. Fenwick Island starts at the ditch, and that's what my grandfather always told me, and the ditch is at Harpoon Hannah's. But we call this Williamsville and Bucks Hill because it's the highest point. But I hope they understand the beach is 3.5 miles, and it's not Fenwick Island. But
so how many feet are you above the elevation of sea level?
Well, if you go all the way up to the old pool hall, we're probably almost 17 feet.
17 feet?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm about 52 feet.
Yes, sir.
So you said you're the highest level, so I don't feel like you're...
Well, I apologize. In my little world, because I don't get out very much.
That's around Williamsville, right?
Yes, sir. Right there on the top of the hill. Yeah. Anymore, I do not leave my house, and I don't turn left, because I got no business at Fenwick Island and the beach. I make a right. We farm all the way from Lewis to Laurel to Ocean Pines.
You don't turn left to go down to Georgia's?
No, sir.
He tries to take me to Georgia.
My mother said there's bad influences in life.
I see.
I'm not going to name any names, but I appreciate y'all's time. And like I said, I am all for AR1. You know, let's keep it a nice community. You know, I'm all about neighbors. I just don't want a lot of them. I mean, Mr. Wilson, you can understand.
Sound a little bit like my son.
You know, I'm all for neighbors. I hope they buy strawberry sweet corn and eat 3 meals a day. And even if you don't like tomatoes, please order them, because that store has to order more tomatoes. Whether you like it or not, they got to order more.
What farm you eat, right?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
You farm they eat.
Absolutely. So I just hope everybody, I want everybody to get along. You know, I don't want any bad neighbors. I don't want this gentleman mad at me. But, you know, it's all about opinions. And the water is a problem. How you fix that problem, I don't really know. You know, we dig out ditches. 12 years ago, we dug the ditches out. We do sections of the tax ditch because we don't have a lot of money with that. You know, and you try to do what is the problem. So when a constituent says, look,
my ditch is plugged up. We dig their ditch out. You know, they pay taxes. That's what we do. Dumping that extra water in, somebody better be smarter than me, but, you know, if the glass is almost full, you can't put a whole lot more in there.
And then you got to spend money to blow the brush off, right?
Absolutely. And you know, I do that, and I don't charge the tax ditch.
I don't either.
Because I don't feel that's the right thing to do. You know, I'm a farmer. I take care of the land. I've mowed those taxes my whole life.
That's how to keep the taxes low, so you don't have to pay.
Yeah, because, you know, if you somebody starts paying taxes, they want to know what they're getting for that money. Yeah. And we don't get a lot. But I won't hark on that, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak in opposition? Anyone else that would like to speak in opposition? Mr. President, the public hearing is now over. And if council desires, we can close the public record. And as I indicated before, since planning and zoning deferred, we cannot take final action.
We will close the public hearing. If it's okay with council, close the public record. Ask Mr. Moore to read the short title. I guess read the short title on the change of zone first.
An ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agricultural residential district to a MR medium density residential district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, containing 13.33 acres more or less.
Make a motion we defer.
Motion, Mr. All Cole, second.
Both applications. Second.
Well, Mr. Wilson, to defer on change of zone number 1827.
Okay.
Any questions? We'll take the vote. Mr. Arlette?
I will vote yes.
Mr. Burton?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
We have motion carried. And Mr. Moore, the conditional use?
An ordinance grant a conditional use of land in a MR medium density residential district for a multifamily 62 duplex unit structure to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, containing 13.33 acres more or less.
Pleasure, Council.
I'll make a motion we defer on that application.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Cole. Second, Mr. Arlette, to defer on condition use number 2090. Questions on the motion?
Yes. Mr. Moore referenced 62. I know that's what's in the document. Testimony today was on 52. Does that need to be reflected anywhere?
This is how it was advertised and what the short title is. So
just
that's what we need
want to
make
reference. Sure that that's a known fact.
Yep.
Okay.
More questions? We'll take the vote. Mr. Arlette?
Yes.
Mr. Burton?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
I'll be yes. Motion carried. Then we do adjourn.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Cole. Second, Mr. Arlette. Questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mr. Arlette?
Yes.
Mr. Burton?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
I vote yes. We're now adjourned. Thank you, everybody.